You're listening to a Score North podcast right now, and if you're a business owner, so are your customers. In fact, I could be talking about your business right now, telling the tens of thousands of loyal fans about you and sending them to your business. Find out how you can partner with your favorite Score North podcast. Visit scorenorth.com now and enter keyword partner. Fill out the form, and we'll get in touch with you quickly. Once Phil, Judd, Declan, or others start talking about your company, you'll be amazed at how many fans start showing up. So visit scorenorth.com now and enter keyword partner.
It's the Score North Twin Show.
Presented today, in part, by our friends just down the sidewalk from Target Field, about a block and a half, maybe Fulton Brewing, which also, we've got the Purple Daily draft party in 10 days, and our friends at Fulton are going to roll out the red carpet for you guys, Score North listeners, Purple Daily listeners out there, Score North Twin Show. So Fulton Brewing is welcoming Vikings fans looking to pregame before the sold-out Purple Daily draft party at the Fillmore on April 25th. You can swing by Fulton's North Loop Tap Room located steps from the Fillmore between 3 and 7 o'clock to get primed with some Lonely Blondes, maybe a 300 IPA before we go live at 7 o'clock inside the Fillmore. Special guest appearance by Vikings quarterback legend Tommy Kramer, who will be on hand to connect with fans from 5 to 7 o'clock. That's April 25th at Fulton Brewing, just down the street from the Fillmore. Before we dive into our state of the Twins here, what's our vibe check after blowing a 3-run lead? Caleb Thielbar back.
Welcome
from the
back.
Injured list. Fart noise.
Yeah.
What's our vibe check here?
So I do think the vibes are better than they were a week ago.
Okay.
So that is good news. I do like that. But the vibes are weird because, yeah, there wasn't a bullpen implosion yesterday, which actually I don't take too much stock into that implosion. Like, that is eventually going to happen. The bullpen's been rock solid. You can't have it happen a lot. But eventually, the bullpen was eventually going to do something poor. You don't wind up see a 3-run lead blown in the eighth. But the vibes with the injuries are getting really weird here. And that's where I think the Twins are in quite a little bit of a predicament as we get into the state of the Twins.
Yeah. I think it's time to, as I think I tweeted this out Saturday, you need to, and they did Saturday, tread water. Like, I don't, their pitching has been, well, their starting pitching has, for the most part, I think, been really good, which is a pleasant surprise because, like, we didn't know beyond the first two who was going to do what, you guys. The bullpen, as Declan said, up until Sunday had been absolutely fantastic. I mean, on Saturday, over the course of two games, 9 innings, no earned runs. The two runs that scored were in extras, and the ghost runner on second base doesn't count as an earned run if he scores. But I think now, like, the left side of your infield is gone. And, you know, guess what, guys? That bit him in the ass on Sunday.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Correa and I think Royce both make those plays. The Kyle Farmer play, and God bless him, he's trying, but it went right through him. It's a tough play, but I think Royce makes that play. And as Rocco said post-game, he literally asked, he said, how many errors were we charged with? None. And then said, there could have been multiple.
Yeah.
So
that's why errors are like such a dumb fielding percentage. Like, that's a play, like you said, that's a play that
right
gets made by high-end.
Right, and infielders. I think Correa for sure makes the play that Castro didn't make, and I think that Royce makes the play that Farmer didn't make. But aren't we right now at a point where, with, you know, until guys start to come back, and they're all, obviously it's going to be one by one. It's not going to be an influx at once. But I think we're at a point where you're literally trying to keep your head above water, stay in things, have some success. But, like, if anybody thinks the Twins right now are going to, they should reel off, I mean, I'm sorry, you are up against it.
Yeah, it is. Because right now you're just, I think you're just trying to get through the next 6 weeks.
Yeah. No, I think you're right.
Be around 500.
Yep.
And which is kind of what they did a year ago. Not because they had the same level of injuries, but I guess Buxton, you know, he kind of counts. But how confident are you guys? And we'll get to the categories here, but if they can just be around 500 in like 6 weeks and we get through April, get to June 1st, see where Royce Lewis is at, maybe Correa's back by then. Obliques are usually what, like 3 or 4 weeks? Probably be like a month for Carlos Correa.
Correa? Well, no, it's been changed now. It's an intercostal
strain,
which actually is not as bad as an oblique. He thinks his quote was remarkable. He said, I've had a cold for like the last week or two, and with all my blowing nose and sneezing, I think I precipitated it through that.
Well, he strained a muscle blowing his nose and sneezing.
I think he weakened it. I think because he was sneezing so much that when, because the play that on all Friday night at the plate, I think, right, Dex, he fouled a ball off. It looked like a really innocuous thing. It's like, how do you get hurt there? But he said, I've been blowing my nose and sneezing so much that I think I like set myself up for when I swung, I actually hurt myself.
That was like when I had food poisoning last month and my abdomen was sore for a week because I was just violently throwing up for seven hours. I mean, I it hurt to stand up for a good three. I was going to bed with ice packs. It was rough. It was really, really rough.
I mean, that would be the best case scenario if he just like has a mild strain from a rogue sneeze and he's just going to be back out. But he's on the injured list. They threw him on the injured list, so he's going to be out for at least the 10 days. But okay, so vibes are. Do we have like a vibe ranking system? I feel like we should do this on the State of the Twins episodes. We should categorize the vibes somehow.
Yeah, I mean, typically, you know, as the kids say, the vibes are immaculate. You know, those would be your top tier vibes.
Let's pick a word.
Immaculate. Okay. So immaculate is the top tier. So for these,
what if we just pick a word that we want for that week? I mean, I don't think any of us are going to pick immaculate right now.
I see what you're saying.
So, like, if you had to say the vibes with the twin, the vibes are blank right now.
The vibes, I can't say fine because they're certainly not fine. I'm trying to think of a good word here. Cautious vibes are my vibe. I'm cautious, a little bit cautious because you're trying to tread water and trying to survive these injuries.
Cloudy, murky,
panicky. Are we panicky?
Nah,
I'm not panicky.
Well, panicky.
No. I don't think you can be because it's not the there's so many guys out that like I would panic if everyone was playing and things weren't going well. The Saturday sweep was pretty damn impressive. I will say that. Like it sort of gets erased because the Sunday meltdown was difficult to watch. But the Saturday sweep, Joe Ryan, how about that start?
Yeah,
career high 12 strikeouts, right? I mean, that was that was an impressive day.
Let's get to these categories, but we're adding a vibes category every Monday now.
Okay,
the vibes right now are blank.
Yeah,
we're saying the vibes are a little murky right now. The vibes are a little questionable right now. A little cloudy right now. So here's the overview for you guys. The Twins are 6-8. They're in fourth place in the American League Central because you have the red hot. At least to start the season, Royals and Guardians are both 10-6, 10-5. So you're three and a half games out. The Twins are 27th in baseball in runs scored per game. Offense has been non-existent. And they are 7th in runs allowed per game, so they've been able to stay competitive. And this is the first week where we can include the playoff odds report as well. According to Baseball Reference, there is no need to panic. The Twins still have a 77% chance to make the postseason, according to Baseball Reference, a 54% chance to win the division, and they are still projected to win 83 games, which means the division is projected to still be atrocious. They have the Guardians, despite the good start. The Guardians are 10-5. The Guardians are projected to win only 65 games the rest of the year. The Royals, similar boat. They have 10 wins already. They're only going to win 61 more games the rest of the year, according to Baseball Reference. Now, this could change, obviously, but the Baseball Reference math is saying, hey, deep breath, calm down. Everything's going to be okay, at least in this putrid division. So the first question for you guys is, what is your favorite current Twins thing? Your favorite thing right now about the Twins?
My favorite thing is the hand from the Undertaker is slowly coming out of the grave. I'm not saying the entire body has shot out of the casket, but the arm and hand has come out of the grave. In the last week, the Twins offense, 28 runs. They've actually finally hit some power. Their 11 home runs are the second most in baseball over the last, at least in the AL over the last week, which is also a good sign. So the offense starting to come alive. It still needs to be better. From a batting average perspective, it was still a rough week. There was some success with runners in scoring position, but still, I believe 4 for 17, even in that crazy game, on the, at least game one of the doubleheader on Saturday. So there's signs of life from the offense. It's not completely awoken from the dead, but it's not in its slumber like it had been from the previous 10 games. I think over the last week here, we're starting to see the offense, even with Correa's injury being a huge buzzkill, start to come alive a little bit. That's been my favorite thing.
Yeah.
Mine is starting pitching. So Friday night, and this is a weird way to start this praise, but Friday night, Pablo Lopez has a rough outing. 4 innings, 6 hits, 5 runs, all earned, 3 walks, 7 strikeouts, home run against. And you're thinking to yourself, oh boy, this is a problem. Like, you're starting a four-game series, double dip on Saturday, and Joe Ryan Saturday. And I feel like, and we've discussed this, I feel like, you know, Joe's been questioned, right? Like, what is Joe exactly? And this show in particular has talked him up quite a bit. But 6 innings, 6 hits, 3 runs, 1 earned, 1 walk, career high 12 strikeouts. Again, a home run that hurt him. But in saying that, you know, you're going to give up home runs. It's, do you give up 2 or 3, which he does not. And then Phil's guy, the guy that Royce just absolutely has crapped on, Simeon Woods Richardson is the 27th man called up in game two. 6 innings, 2 hits, 1 run, 1 walk. 5 Ks. We've had a lot of questions about, okay, Pablo Lopez, and then what, right? And Gray is gone. Starting pitching? I don't think that there's any question that if you had gone to somebody in March and said, hey, X amount of time into, what, 14 games in, the starting pitching is going to give you this, that every Twins fan would have instantly said, oh, I'm taking that. So starting pitching to me has been really, really solid. And I'm not saying that if they're in the race, they might not need some help at the deadline. I am saying that this is a start, and especially from Joe Ryan in particular, that to me starts to really create a, okay, you do have something here.
Yeah. By the way, Simeon Woods Richardson, it was his second start with the St. Paul Saints was a complete disaster. He gave up like 7 runs in a short start, and that was the last outing he had before coming in for the doubleheader. But yeah, he's they need someone to step up and be a number 5 starter. I mean, Varland hasn't yet. So can Simeon Woods, it would be great if Woods Richardson could come in, be the number 5 starter, be capable. I'm not saying he's going to be that dominant the whole season. And now Varland becomes a late inning reliever again. Like, I don't know. The more you look at him as a starter, and it's been 2 starts in spring training, I get it, but like, can we just put Louis Varland in the bullpen? Can we get him out there throwing 98 miles an hour? Just have a guy who can, especially with all the injuries and stuff.
His stuff plays too. Like, his stuff plays really well out there, I think.
Yeah. I know it's only 2 starts, and I'm sure they want to see this through 5, 6, 7, 8 starts. But just sticking on the pitching for a second, Joe Ryan through 3 starts. So he's gone 17 and a third total in the 3 starts. He has 24 strikeouts to just 2 walks, which is a ridiculous ratio. Mm-hmm. And I'll go back to what I was kind of saying in the weeks leading up to the start of the season, that 2 years ago, when he was 25, 26 years old, and we saw some flashes early on, and his prospect status before then with the Rays, he was being talked about as maybe an ace of a rotation caliber pitcher. And then we saw, like, oh, he's got a little home run issue. And then last year with the injury, that guy is still in there. The guy that was projected to maybe be your ace, your opening day starter caliber guy, that guy has been in there still. And we're seeing it in these first 3 starts, the 12 strikeouts. Like, what a development if all of a sudden he has, you got Pablo Lopez, who I think is going to come around, and then he all of a sudden is like your, almost like your 1B starter. Wouldn't that be? And then Bailey Ober has kind of come around after the disaster first start. I don't know. I'm not really out on the starting pitching like a lot of people have been. And Joe Ryan is a big reason for that. So
this is Tom Bernard. Can't get enough of sports talk with Phil Mackey and Judd Zolgad. Tune in to the new Tom Bernard Show podcast Monday through Friday as Phil and Judd join me to discuss the latest sports headlines and whatever else comes to mind.
Just download the Tom Bernard Show app wherever you get your podcasts, or visit TomBernardShow.com. It's another way to get more from me and Judd talking sports and having fun with Tom. and it's all at your fingertips. Download the Tom Bernard Show app now and join the conversation. Yeah,
yeah, that splitter that he has been phenomenal for him. So he worked on that a lot more. The velocity is up. It has a whiff percentage of 40% this season. So, I mean, that thing is getting hitters to chase, and hitters are also chasing all over the place because Joe Ryan just has filthy movement on a ton of his different breaking balls and off-speed stuff. So, I mean, there's a world where Joe Ryan does leapfrog Pablo Lopez as your number one starter. Like, that is 100% a possibility. I'm not too concerned with Pablo's, you know, rough starts here back-to-back, but there is a world where Joe Ryan does take a significant step forward where he actually becomes your ace and Pablo Lopez is your two.
Yeah. I'll give you my favorite thing. It's got to be that Eddie Julian is continuing to show, like, 25 home run power here. He's got four early on. There's still some issues with just, like, taking close pitches, but Eddie Julian, and then I'll kind of put two and one here in terms of young hitters. Austin Martin, who is the same age as Eddie Julian, with Julian we've just seen a lot more of. He looks competitive, and I'm going based off, like, his first full week and a half in the big leagues. Only four strikeouts in his first 11 games, 28 plate appearances. So to translate the contact, and it's, you know, obviously he's not going to be a guy that hits 25 home runs like Julian. I saw Judd tweeting about this over the weekend too. It's like people are so hung up on what he can't do as a hitter that we're losing focus on what he can do. And what he can do is something that this team needs.
Yeah.
Avoid strikeouts, put the ball in play, work counts, get on base.
Exactly.
Right. And also on the defensive side, you can put him at different positions. You can put him in a couple different outfield spots. He can play infield. So it's early. It's his first week and a half in the big leagues, but I kind of like what we're seeing from Austin Martin.
Yeah, he can work a count. He's just a change of pace. You know, Jose Miranda, I know, hasn't maybe worked out for the first week, but the reason they called him up and the reason they put him in the middle of the order last week was because they were taking too many strike threes, and Jose Miranda is going to swing at everything. Yeah. So they were trying to put the ball in play, and even though that hasn't worked for them, you got to try new things. And Austin Martin, when he was called up after the Royce Lewis injury for game two, kind of sat on the bench for the first 4 or 5 days and then found himself in the lineup. He's getting base hits off Tyler Glass now. He goes from batting ninth to batting sixth in his second, you know, in one of his few major league starts. So there's definitely something here that plays. And if the power comes, it comes. But, dude, you need competitive at-bats at this point. And his defensive flexibility allows you to kind of put him almost not anywhere on the field, but he's going to be a value player in the field and in the lineup for the Twins.
Yeah, he has, by the way, there's a, in terms of swinging strike rate, so he has, Austin Martin, his swinging strike rate is among the best or lowest of any hitter on the team. So, like, Matt Wallner's swinging strike rate is 40%, which is just, like, how many swinging strikes out of total strikes. When Austin Martin gets a strike called, it's because he took a pitch that was in the zone, pretty much. So something to watch. Like, the guy can make contact and work account. Okay, your least favorite current Twins thing.
My least favorite thing is what's about to take place, and that is Willie Castro at shortstop, because that's going to be the plan. They're going to put Willie Castro the majority of the time at short. Kyle Farmer will still play third base, and he might mix in a time or two at short. But the plan right now is, with Carlos Correa's injury, to put Willie Castro at short. And we have seen how great Correa's glove is. He can make plays better than anyone. The relay throw against the Dodgers was awesome. And Willie Castro is a nice little piece that you can plug in here and there, but you shouldn't have to rely on him. My least favorite thing is Willie Castro is now your everyday shortstop for probably the next month. He's going to be most likely your everyday shortstop because Brooks Lee is still hurt, and you have no real competitive option there. So my least favorite thing hasn't really happened yet. It's going to take place over the next month, and it's Willie Castro at short.
So some statistics on Willie Castro at shortstop. He, you know, he has played a smattering of shortstop every year since 2019. He played 253 innings at shortstop in 2019 with the Tigers, 212 in 2020. He's only played, like, sparingly at shortstop with the Twins. But it did not go well. In terms of defensive runs saved, he was worth minus 8 runs compared to average in just 200 innings the last time he played bulk shortstop with the Tigers a few years ago. And that was a younger, spryer version of Willie Castro, too. Not that he's old, but so, what was
Farmer's defensive runs saved and metrics. Because if you guys recall, he was actually signed before Correa joined the fray a couple of years ago. And I'm not saying he's great, but he was supposed to be the shortstop. I'm just curious if Farmer wouldn't give you a little bit more of a competitive defensive presence there.
Yeah,
I might be wrong.
He is, let's see here. So Farmer, because he was the starting shortstop for the Reds in 2021. Yeah,
he was going to start here before Correa came.
Yep. And he was, 2022. I mean, he played 1,000 innings and then 840, and he was an average to slightly above average defensive shortstop. But then he started to metrically fade last year with the Twins. Now he's 30, going to be 34 years old by the end of the year. So maybe they're just looking at range and saying, I don't know, we trust. And you're also trying to fill multiple holes at this point too,
because you're trying to fill third base as well. But
so I don't know. There's not any really great option until Brooks Lee gets healthy. Now, would you consider putting Austin Martin over there somewhere?
Maybe. I don't
probably
know.
That's third to fourth short, you think? Like just because
but
of that.
But it's like.
But the problem in the Castro discussion is God just didn't mean him to play this much baseball, period. So like it's not even a question of where he's playing, in my opinion. The conversation is how much should he play, but now you're being forced to play him. This goes back to the top of the show. You are treading water. You're literally trying to just keep above the fray until guys come back, because that's where things stand right now.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Austin Martin, so he, because he came up as a shortstop, like he was drafted as a shortstop, but the last time he played shortstop on a regular basis was 2022 in the minor leagues, and then they shifted him. But I don't know, somebody smarter than me would have to, was he a disaster at shortstop, or was it just, hey, we got Royce Lewis in here, we got Carlos Correa, we're going to move you. So he does have a couple years of pro ball experience on the left side, but there's not many great options here.
Yeah. Mm. So mine is this. I was going through the OPSs last night of guys, particularly who were in the lineup on Sunday, and it's a who's who of bad. Like it's really, really depressing, because I started off with the averages, which aren't good, but then I thought the majority of folks that watch this show who are educated on baseball metrics and such would say, well, who cares about that? But the OPSs are bad. But I'm going to give you one in particular, because I think this guy can change his approach, and I don't think it needs to be like something that someone tells him. But Byron Buxton right now is hitting 196. And his OPS is 501, okay? And I feel like Byron has gotten into the habit, and this might have started with the trying to do too much as a DH. I feel like Byron has gotten into the habit of thinking that it's all about his power. And I'll go back to that game in the first week in Kansas City when he hit the ball, that hopper. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It was awesome. It scored, a run or two? It helped win that game. And the reality is this. Byron Buxton offers you, and look, if he gets into a pitch, that's awesome. But Byron Buxton offers you so much more, and I feel like if the ball is in play off his bat, it's a nightmare. A lot of guys can hit home runs. Not a lot of guys can put balls in play, and I'm talking ground balls like to the shortstop, and can cause the havoc that Buxton can. So my least favorite thing right now is I feel like Buxton has fallen in love with trying to hit for power. Certainly part of Byron's game, not dismissing that. But I am saying that if you think about it, his skill set involves so much more, and it feels to me like it's not being used now. And I don't know if that comes from the top. I don't know if that comes from Byron. It very well might. But I would love to see him just hit the ball on the ground more. Put the ball in play more.
I was with you until you said that.
Well, put the ball in
play. He's one of the best power hitters in baseball. And you want to hit ground balls?
Well, okay, line drives. How about that? I'm just saying it feels like his approach is an all or nothing approach far too much. And Byron Buxton has more to offer. So I would like to see him. That's fine. I'll say line drives. I'll say whatever gets the ball in play more and doesn't result in strikeouts and doesn't result in what to me feels like a one outcome at bat possibility.
What's interesting is he has always been a very good fastball hitter. It's been off speed that has just destroyed him. And you get an 0-2 count on Byron Buxton, you can almost guarantee it's going to end on that third pitch. This year so far, he has only 4 hits on fastballs. He's only hitting fastballs 182, which is uncharacteristic of him because he typically drives them over the fence. This year, it's kind of been the opposite. He's been able to adjust a bit on off-speed pitches, and he's actually putting those way more in play and getting success with them. So, you know, Trevor Plouffe talked to us, you know, about maybe not overcorrecting and got to make tweaks here and there. And I bet Byron did probably spend a good amount of time saying, how can I finally start hitting some off-speed pitching? And it has, to a degree, worked in a small sample for the first 2 weeks of the season. But he's always been a fastball hunter and killer. And so far, he is not hitting fastballs even. So it's what approach do you want to retake? Where do you want to go from here if you've adjusted to be better on off-speed pitching, but you're also still looking for your first home run and you're not crushing fastballs like you typically used to?
Yeah, I'll give you one more nugget here, too. And it's so, again, it's like we're two and a half weeks into the season. It's
right, 14 games.
Things are, but he does have... If the season ended today, which it doesn't, he would have the lowest contact percentage of any year in his career. So when he is swinging, he is not making contact more often than any other year in his career. Ordinarily, he makes contact on 71% of pitches he swings at. It's 60% this year so far. So he's just not, I mean, and maybe some of it's the fastball thing. He needs to make contact more first.
Right.
Before we talk about like batted ball distribution, that's right. Batted ball distribution.
Baseball.
And we'll see. It might come around here at some point before the, I don't want to make a judgment on him until we've seen him out there. I mean, the good news on him is he's playing a lot. Like I think he's second on the team in plate appearances so far.
That's absolutely fantastic. Yes.
In fact, I take that back. He's second. Yeah. He's behind, I guess he's third behind Carlos Santana and Eddie Julian, but they're throwing him out there.
Yep.
You know, he's
defense seems spot on.
Yep. Defense has been great.
That's the good news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. My least favorite current Twins thing is something very specific about the bullpen. I don't know why they sent Jorge Alcala out to AAA. So he comes into this Monday State of the Twins, leading all Twins relievers in innings pitched, ERA, obviously, because he's not giving up an earned run in 8 1/3. His strikeout rate is right in line with what you would hope. It's about 10 strikeouts per 9 innings. The walk rate is reasonable at 3 walks per 9. Like, all of his peripherals sort of match up. It's not like he's just getting lucky to avoid giving up runs. And the Twins decided, and I get that you're going to do some shuffling where if one guy is unavailable or whatever, or maybe a guy's not feeling 100%. This one just kind of is a head scratcher. So I don't, like, is there like a collective bargaining reason why they would do this? And a couple of years ago, they made a tweak to the option rules. And even after reading this, I don't think this matters in this case. So you get option seasons, which has always been the case. People kind of for a long time mistaked that, like, if you're out of options, or if you only have 2 options left or 3 options left, whatever, that it's like individual send downs during a year. It's actually option seasons up until 2 years ago, in which they added in season option limits as well. Well, Alcala has like 2 option seasons remaining. So they have the freedom to send him up and down however they see fit. And the new rule as of 2 years ago is you can send a guy down and back up 5 times in an individual season. So like there's no, like this early in the year, there's no reason why you would strategically make a move like this unless you just don't think he's good enough to be in your bullpen. Like, I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me why they sent statistically their best reliever out to AAA 3 weeks into the season.
It's very perplexing. And look, Cole Sands pitched well yesterday and has pitched well this season too. I shouldn't just say just pitched well yesterday, but you're going to face a tough decision here because Duran also, who threw a bullpen on Friday, is going to throw another one tomorrow. If things go well with that, you're probably talking about a rehab assignment. Again, these are all best case scenarios, but you're probably talking about Duran rejoining the Twins in the active roster, hopefully in a week's time, maybe a little bit more. But you have an embarrassment of riches in the bullpen. I don't know if I agree, though, with sending Alcala down. And maybe that just becomes an option game. And the thing I don't really want to have happen is you piss off one of your better flame-throwing relievers. I mean, they have stuck with him for the last few years because he's been hurt, and he finally earns an opportunity to make the big league roster a little bit out of injury necessity, but makes the big league roster, pitches well, has a little bit of discomfort a week ago, but clearly it was he was fine because he ends up pitching on back-to-back days shortly after that. My fear is you're going to piss off a flamethrower and not piss him off to make him better. You're just going to piss him off, which I can't stand.
I mean, he doesn't really have any leverage to do anything about it.
I know. Yeah.
It's just, yeah, it's I don't know. It's weird. Strange. It's weird process to say, hey, this guy that has 8 1/3 scoreless innings after battling injury problems and ineffectiveness for a couple of years, he's back to being the pitcher that you hoped he would become. Mm-hmm. Go back to St. Paul and hang out. You know, I don't know. It's weird.
You think it's because, see, I was trying to like think of, because there's no way Baldelli sanctioned this, right? Like he's been great for him. I wonder if it's something from Falvey, for instance, that we're not thinking about.
Well, and because also they, I think they have three lefties in their bullpen right now, which is very rare. They would ordinarily not have three lefties.
Right.
So they're trying to, for whatever reason, they want three lefties, or again, I'd have to go look at like certain guys' options versus others remaining. Thielbar is another one where, man, he's 37 years old.
Yeah.
He was rough at the end of the season last year.
Yep.
Is he on borrowed time here where, hey, if he doesn't get it going in the first couple weeks, they've got Steven Okert, they've got Cody Funderburk, who strikes out everybody.
I was going to say, I think he's just fine. Exactly.
So, I don't know. So those are some things we don't like. Hey, before we get to another round of other things people should pay attention to, Dex, let's talk about Element Hotel here. Not only for the draft party, but just for Twins fans looking for a great hotel steps away from the ballpark.
Absolutely. Element Hotel, yeah, just a few steps down there from Target Field. It's a great staycation option if you're a Twins fan, or maybe even you're, an Orioles fan, or you're a Royals fan. Maybe you're coming to Target Field for the first time. Go to Element Hotel in Minneapolis. Again, just steps away from Target Field. It's got a 24-hour fitness center. They have free Wi-Fi. They even allow you to bring your dogs. So, yes, they have a pet-friendly hotel, too. You can book your stay by going to elements-hotels.marriott.com. It's also in the link in the bio here in the YouTube video. Go see Element and go book a room at the Element Hotel in Minneapolis.
Okay, one more lap around the room here. Something on this State of the Twins episode, something else that people should be paying attention to.
I'm going to stick actually with the lefties in the bullpen thing here, because this is weird. There's now three of them. And at one point, you know, Royce has been kind of asking, is there going to be a lefty starter option? And they don't even have a lefty starter option. And Okert and Funderburk have been phenomenal for them. They pitched in some high leverage spots against the Dodgers and delivered, dude. Those two were great for you. So now you have three in the bullpen, and they've used Thielbar against righties too. So it's not like Thielbar is an exclusive southpaw on southpaw or lefty on lefty situation pitcher. But I do wonder if there's going to be regression to someone. And I gave Judd some bullpen pecking order rankings about a little over a month ago when spring training was still going on. And it just seemed like regression was potentially going to hit a guy like Thielbar just because of age.
Yes.
And now with Okert and Funderburk taking the next step, who are younger and are striking guys out, I just don't know if three lefties in the bullpen is going to work long term. I really don't. So that is something I think we need to kind of monitor and observe over the next few weeks.
Yeah, it's like they finally have three lefties that they sort of trust, and they don't want to let any of them go off the...
Right.
It's nice to have lefties. It'd be nice if one of them was a starter, to your point. Okay, Jeb, what about you?
Yes, it would be very nice. I think that on Saturday in game one and on Sunday, we learned, so when the conversation is, well, strikeouts are fine. Strikeouts are just outs, blah, blah, blah. Think about it this way, okay? On Saturday, Ryan Jeffers in, I think, the 12th, if I'm not mistaken, bases loaded, hits a shot to third base, all right? Now, the third baseman is charged with an error because the ball goes through him. But the fact is, if that ball's not in play, none of that takes place. Yeah. On Sunday, Mark Canha hits a shot to third base. The ball goes through Farmer. Interestingly enough, that's a hit, but the fact is it's basically the same play, right? But that scores key runs. The point being is when we say, well, strikeouts are like outs, well, no, they're not, because the thing is, when the ball goes into play, you don't know what's going to transpire. The ball can go through a guy. It can be a tougher play to make. So I think that's a small thing that in game one on Saturday and certainly on Sunday ended up being a huge thing, which is when the ball gets hit to somebody, human error becomes at least potential end result. And in both cases played out to the advantage of the teams that had guys be able to get the ball into play.
We need to ban errors in fielding percentage. I feel like we've done a good job on the broadcast now, especially now that you've got a Corey Provis who's analytically friendly.
The telecasts were unbelievable this weekend, by the way. He and Perk, oh my God.
That's great.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say, television-wise, that was as good as we have heard from regular broadcasters since Jimmy Cott and Ted Robinson.
Wow.
It was that good.
I don't even remember. Like, I was
okay.
They
were fantastic together. But in part because like Perk is just really damn good.
You didn't enjoy any of the Dick and Bert years early before they became kind of a parody. Like the early 2000s Dick and Bert, Circle Me, it was fresh.
I knew a lot behind the scenes at the time, so no, because I know the hate and consternation that was going on in a book that I will write someday called Circle Me This.
Circle My Blank.
Circle Me This. But I just think the conversations between Perk and Provis are fantastic, and like they basically have a discussion where I'm like engaged. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, oh, that makes sense. It's just really good. And Glenn is fantastic.
Yep, Perk's the man. I would say this is more looking out because they play Baltimore for three games on the road. Then they come back home, Detroit, Chicago. They'll be home for seven games. Something else to note, it feels like fan apathy is very strong right now. Just going through the offseason with the payroll conundrum, I think there's a lot of either negativity again toward ownership or just, they're off to a bad start and Royce Lewis is hurt again. And now Carlos Correa is hurt and they're just kind of sleepwalking their way through the first part of the season. And of course, ownership didn't want to open up the wallet and pay for an extra $30 million in players, which I totally understand. The attendance has sort of reflected that, like, you know, opening day. Okay. Not a sellout. And then the Dodgers come to town and the paid attendance was 15,000, 17,000, 18,000. That wasn't how many people were in the actual ballpark. They've roped off the upper deck. Like, there's just a lot of signs of fan apathy right now, and it's going to be on the Twins to just win games and get people back in the ballpark. So that's something to hopefully you're still at least listening to this podcast, though, and subscribing to the brand new Score North Twin Show YouTube channel, 2,500 subscribers. In the first month, we appreciate you guys, but
I think
it's kind of a tenuous position with fans.
You know what
right
I think
now.
A big thing is? I think a big thing is this, that the Twins, you know, including in when Provis did a conference call on his shift to TV, I think the Twins saying you will be able to stream games and then it being pulled back.
It's tough.
Because like if you go back to the playoff game against Toronto when a bunch of young kids came out, and I know Patrick sort of mocks it, but those are people who, if they were going to stay engaged, have to stream games. Like, there ain't no way they're getting a cable package to get Bally's. So I think that was a big, big miss, especially when you basically said the blackout days are done, and then late in the offseason you come back and you're like, oh, just kidding, they're not done.
Yep. Yeah, it's just like, yeah, to come out and to buzzkill with the payroll thing and then the TV situation leading to the same old, and then the Twins, bunch of injuries, 6-8. Just, they got to do something to spark some fan interest here. Mm-hmm. So, come on, Twins. Go take 2 out of 3 from the Orioles and come
do
back
something.
Home. And
get the little
poke
stick.
Them with a stick.
Do something.
Come on. So, there's your state of the Twins here. All right, there's a sign of life. They've won a few games. They've won 3 of their last 5. They choked one away on Sunday. We'll see what happens against the Orioles here. Trevor Plouffe Tuesday, tomorrow, a random twin of the week later on this week, and a bunch of extra innings episodes led by our resident beat podcaster, Declan, here. We'll see you guys tomorrow with Trevor.